Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom on the program this evening. The impasse in India-US ties continues to be our focus, with the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, sounding the alarm now, warning that these sanctions risk fracturing a vital alliance. In a Newsweek op-ed, Haley urged President Trump to treat India as a prized democratic partner, not an adversary like China, emphasizing India's role as a counterweight to Beijing's global ambitions. She called the tariffs a strategic disaster, noting India's potential to reshape supply chains and stabilize the Middle East. Now, New Delhi has consistently defended our energy policy as being a national necessity. As ties strain, Haley's plea for urgent talks with Prime Minister Modi underscores the need perhaps to mend this critical partnership, but has the damage already been done? And if so, to what extent? We have a panel with us, but first I'm joined by Ambassador Javed Ashraf. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I don't know. I know that you can't quantify this in a 1 to 100 scale, but let me still ask you, just how bad is the relationship with America now compared to what it was a few weeks back?
It's difficult to quantify, but actually it is in a pretty difficult space. And the reason is less substantive and more, I think, to do with the atmospherics, the language, the discourse, the absolute corrosive manner in which, the president is speaking of, President Trump is speaking about the relationship. But also he's politicized it in a very big way. And I think you must understand that, when some of his MAGA followers, including the Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, start speaking about the problems of India-US relations and India buying oil and profiteering from oil, then it is actually reaching a level of politicization which we haven't seen before. And Chiefs of Staff and Deputy Chiefs of Staff barely ever comment on international relations. But you're seeing that happen. You're seeing the chorus in which the Treasury Secretary and others are speaking. So when, I'd say that, that what you're witnessing is, in a sense, a difficult situation for India and the United States to engage in a mature, restrained, calm discussions about the respective points of view, interests, etc. Because don't forget that India also has a prime minister and the government also has a domestic political constituency. We recognize that there are three sets of variables at play. There is the political, there is the economic, and there is a geopolitical factor at play. And in a sense, to borrow a term from mathematics, the linear programming, we have to optimize taking into account these three variables. And I think because of the manner in which the salvos are being fired, and quite frankly, in a way which is pretty hypocritical, because if you see President Trump, in the manner in which he laid out the red carpet for President Putin without actually any concessions being made, the, in a sense, willing suspension of disbelief about President Putin's intentions, or the fact that the U.S. continues to deal with Russia, buys critical items that it needs, yep. You're right from the beginning, after 2022, allowed or exempted certain countries from buying piped gas, apart from LNG. So all of this is playing out. You've seen China and a very, very specious argument being made about China being, there already. Turkey, a NATO member, a major buyer of oil. So I think all of this, when it is seen, actually vitiates the atmosphere in a way which makes it difficult for a conversation. Let me tell you, this is very different from 1998, when there was a strategic, people often draw comparisons with it, Vishnu. But I think there are lessons to be drawn from it, but not necessarily that the two can be equated. Even then, Madeleine Albright spoke about India, then Secretary of State, digging itself into a hole from which it will be very difficult for India to come out. But at the same time, they actually reached out through Stroke Talbot and engaged in a very mature conversation that redefined the terms of engagement.
No, but Ambassador, let me ask you, I understand that, is there a logic in suggesting that India waits out the Trump term, that the relationship is strong enough to weather whatever Trump has to say or his people have to say? It's been decades of work in this relationship. It's premised on a whole lot of things.
Yes.
And that while it may never be business as usual, perhaps not for years, it will come back to a level of evenness which works for us.
So I think one point, of course, is that you remember nothing. We always think the present is permanent. So it is always something to bear in mind that there is a long term. In the United States, there is a very peculiar habit of thinking sequentially and linearly. So they look at problems in short-term, sequential manner. And I think it's very important for us to recognize that there is a longer-term perspective. This relationship has been built by governments in India from both the UPA and the NDA. There have been both Democratic and Republican governments in the past that have worked very hard on that relationship to bring it to where it is. There is a great deal of substance, merit in the relationship. There is a larger big picture. We both recognize that we are aligned, if not allied, on some very major issues. And I think two things we must do. We have to continue to work the very broad range of institutional mechanisms at official levels. We have to continue to focus on the very multidimensional aspects of the relationship and on the substance that we have built, and not get sort of completely, in a sense, held back by what you are seeing as this volley of rhetoric at the political level. Admittedly, we need to speak also on trade issues, because there is $48 to $50 billion of exports and jobs and livelihoods that are at stake. But we have to do this in the short run with the Trump administration without sacrificing our core interests on the sensitive sectors, or, I might add, sovereign choices. Yeah. India, as an independent country with a strong DNA for strategic autonomy, must continue to exercise strong sovereign choices, as we have done in the past whenever we've had differences with the United States. So short term, continue to engage. Long term, you will find ways to bounce back, because I think the fundamental merits are there. But this is also a wake-up call that you should not, you remember the vicissitudes of this relationship, of a great power relationship which has global interests, tells you that we must shield ourselves from that level of dependencies that build vulnerabilities for us. And I think that is why we must continue to maintain a multi-alignment policy, a very diversified relationship, continue to focus on our relationships with other major powers, our extended neighborhood with Europe. These are very Africa and Latin America, because these are also extremely important for India to aspire to be what it wants to be. And it also gives you, by the way, that by building this strategic choices, a degree of leverage with the United States that you would sacrifice if you get over-dependent on one relationship.
Okay, Ambassador, thanks very much for sharing that perspective. Thanks very much indeed. It is indeed, I would use the word crisis perhaps to talk about the relationship right now. Not many have used that word. Perhaps that's where we are. Hopefully it will be fixed. Thanks so very much for being with us. I'm also joined at this stage by Ashok Mallick, Christopher Clary, and David Sofer, a Republican strategist. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Mr. Sofer, let me come to you first. It's really shocking for many of us in India, particularly those of us who believed that the India-America equation would be really substantive, to see a lot of the rhetoric come out of America. India and America had a special relationship. Is that over?
No. So India and America, quite simply, are making trade again. So we are making America fair again by way of trade. And it's very important for your viewers to note that the counter tariffs that we've implemented on India, right, and they are counter tariffs, right, have not been implemented yet. So we are actively negotiating with our friends and partners in India to come to a resolution there. Secondly, Russian oil and Russian safety, Ukraine safety, and fair trade there is a very important thing. Our friends in Europe were not able to provide us with the backstop for peace, and so we are now stepping in, trying to create peace in that region. And this is really
But Mr. Sofer, just to interrupt you for half a second, India is never going to stop the import of Russian oil with a gun to New Delhi's head. It's just not going to happen. That being the case, America can keep talking, but it's not going to happen. Therefore, what is America going to do? Actually slap India with 50% sanctions and implemented?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a discussion that's ongoing now, so we'll have to wait to see how that unfolds. I mean, these sanctions have not been implemented yet, and they're ongoing. So we'll have to see how that unfolds as we are actively seeking, you know, we're actively seeking for fair trade.
All right.
And, yeah, and it's important for your viewers to know that these are also reciprocal tariffs as well. So
No, India wants free trade. We were a couple of signatures away from that free trade deal happening. Those talks have broken down. The American delegation isn't coming over here. It was almost a done deal. It was just the I's which were being dotted, the T's which were being crossed. It's this 25% sanction over and above which is the issue. It's not the trade issue. That was being resolved quite amicably after many rounds of talks. I think that, so, you know, it's the oil thing which has thrown the entire relationship off. But bear with me. Christopher Clary with us at this stage. How would you assess where India-US ties now stand, Christopher?
You know, these are troubling times, the memories of this period, though I do think the period will not, you know, hopefully endure that much longer. I think the memories will linger, and Ambassador Ashraf was persuasive on the fact that it will probably reinforce India's desire to maintain multi-alignment. You know, in my assessment, the relationship has broken down because there has been some sort of difficulty with trust at the very top. You know, I don't think the relationship has the same difficulties at the bureaucratic level. I don't think it has the same difficulties at the societal level. But we are in a period where the prime minister and the president, that relationship is not functioning as well as it was as recently as Prime Minister Modi's visit in February. So I think that to repair the relationship involves both some concrete, perhaps discrete concessions on the Indian side. Some of those things I think can happen behind the scenes, as well as some discrete conversations at the highest levels, as well as probably some public statement that relationship between the prime minister and the president is back on track.
Sure.
That's going to be hard to engineer, but I think it's in the interest of New Delhi and Washington to engineer that outcome.
Ashok, the relationship between Trump and Modi was something that, you know, I mean, both leaders have spoken about any number of times. Has that essentially gone for the moment?
Thank you, Vishnu. Thank you for having me here. Vishnu, I'm like a lot of other people. I've never been a great one for talking about the personal chemistry between prime ministers and presidents in the India-US context. Every Indian prime minister since Narasimha Rao, or at least Vajpayee, and every U.S. president since Clinton in the second term, have made an attempt to get to know their opposite number and work for their country's sake with the priorities of the other person, the other man. They've always been men. Prime Minister Modi has worked with President Obama, President Trump in his first term, President Biden, and this has been reciprocated by U.S. presidents as well. So these individuals have all been very different. Manmohan Singh and George Bush were very different as individuals, but their countries needed them to work together, and they did. President Obama and President Modi were very different individuals, but they worked together. So I don't think personal chemistry, while it's a very cute media clickbait headline, is really so as important in the Indo-US context as the substance of the relationship and the political trust that has provided a protective layer almost on a technology and business relationship that has continued apace. That technology and business relationship will still continue and still advance because those links remain very strong and are largely in the private sector or at the technical level. But the fact is the political trust at the top, the political communication at the top has broken down. And some of the almost reckless comments we've heard from the White House, from people around the White House, from U.S. administration officials in recent days have not helped. They have made it more difficult for any government in India to come up with more concessions or compromise to what is already seen to be a fairly good paid offer from India,
sure,
which has not been responded to by the White House.
David Soferian, in all of this, China seems to really working its relationship with India. We've had a horrible relationship with China since, certainly since the Galwan crisis of 7 odd years back. But Beijing is now talking about rare earths with India. They're talking about finding a solution, both sides, de-escalation along the line of actual control. They're talking about visas for businessmen and tourists. They're talking about direct air flights resuming. The Prime Minister goes to meet President Xi in China at the SCO summit in a couple of days. There's a vacuum in international relations, and China seems to have moved in.
India-US
relationship has been premised at one level on China being seen as an adversary. Go ahead.
Sure. I think that, when it comes to China, they could pick up, they could pick up some of the slack, but again, it's buyer beware. So, we have to see how that unfolds as well. It's important to note that China is in a crippling depression over there, so they're having a real tough time with their GDP and all of that, and their manufacturing has gone way down. So you have to see how that unfolds. But, I think that the India-American relations has not dissolved. It will continue to grow, and I think that this is like everything else in this fast-moving, pro-American and pro-world peace administration that, you have to understand that these are negotiation tactics, and I don't think it's a permanent thing. I think that Indo-American relations will continue to grow, and we have a lot of shared common interests. So, we'll have to see how it really unfolds. So, I think that we're confident over here that a resolution will happen. And the idea that, the narrative with the American opposition, the Democrat Party, whose foreign policy is just disastrous when it comes to India and China, for that matter, when they say it's tough times, America is strong by every metric. So that's an important piece to note here. So, as America continues to grow, we're in a position to do fantastic things with other great democracies around the world. So it's not all doom and gloom, and I think that a mutually beneficial deal will be imminent at some point in this quarter with India.
Okay.
So I don't really see China as this huge threat.
Christopher, how do you see the this newfound equation between Beijing and New Delhi?
Ultimately it's India, not the United States, that has a territorial dispute with China. Ultimately, it's India, not the United States, that had its soldiers clubbed to death and die of hypothermia in the Galwan Valley. So, India has more on the line here. If Indian leaders believe that a period of conciliation and rapprochement is appropriate, I understand that. China obviously also has some tone that it can set, a more conciliatory tone, which it may be doing as it also feels hemmed in by the Trump administration's policy. I think there's probably a limit to what the causal effect of Washington here. China is also playing cards that allow for this apparent continued de-escalation along that disputed frontier. But, the reason that territorial dispute has been active on and off since the 1950s is because it's really hard to resolve it. There is this proposal now for the early harvest that has not been on the table for almost 20 years in an active way. So I'm skeptical that the long-run irritants will go away. And I think there is an important status competition between India and China that the U.S. That the U.S. is not the principal driver of. So I think it probably the U.S., the troubles with the U.S. has probably made this move more attractive. But it should be noted that the reconciliation that Prime Minister Modi met with Xi long before Trump was inaugurated, and some of these moves were a conscious desire by both sides in Beijing and Delhi to calm down after the tragic events of 2020.
Ashok, a final word to you. you know, I mean, there's this huge distrust which obviously exists between, certainly strategically between India and China. And now we're talking about peace. You know, those of us who've reported this would always look at this as, you know, with a great deal of concern about, you know, what this would actually mean. Do you actually see there, do you actually see the possibility of a major deal being announced or a major announcement, you know, happening in Tianjin when the Prime Minister meets President Xi?
You know, your guess is as good as mine, but let me just say, I have heard anyone in the Indian system use grand words like peace. What they have said is, since October 2024, when the last of the friction points were, troops were almost eyeball to eyeball since 2020, the last of those friction points was resolved, there was some room for economic engagement with guardrails. Things are far from normal at the border. There are still troops at locations they were not in February 2020. And there's still tens of thousands of those troops out there. So, you know, distrust remains high. Having said that, there is room for some economic activity, especially in areas where import or collaboration with China or JVs with China for components, for intermediates, for intermediary goods, for boring machines, for engineering equipment, for Indian manufacturing plants can continue, can advance. This does not mean collaboration in critical technology areas such as telecom or robotics or AI, for instance. So it is collaboration, it is cooperation with guardrails, which is what many other countries, especially countries in the West, are doing with China. Now, this does not take away from the fact that there is a we have a problem in Washington, where Washington and people in the Trump administration, close to the White House, are not sufficiently sensitive to what throwaway remarks and sometimes thoughtless remarks are doing to public opinion and a government agency here in Delhi, a political agency here in Delhi. They have certainly soured the mood. And they've put at risk 20 or 25 years of very hard work on both sides. So I'm not sufficiently optimistic that all of this can be vanish in a couple of weeks and we can go back to things being normal with just a phone call. There is the action has happened which will have a reaction. I don't think folks in Washington are quite getting it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, it's not going to be business as usual for some time. We'll leave it over there. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Interesting times, a massive churn in international relations. The Prime Minister headed to China for the first time in 7 years. You know, people in America appealing Nikki Haley now to the US President saying, treat India properly, treat India as a prized democratic partner, not as an adversary. India is not China. But Trump seems to, you know, have a mind of his own, which he clearly does. Where does that leave America and India? We leave it there. More coming up.